It's your chance to have a say on the future of the Jacksonville Landing. We'll tell you how in just a moment. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9. And now, make sure to subscribe to those daily podcasts we've got on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, the CEO of Jacksonville's Downtown Investment Authority wants your calls on the future of the Landing. And whatever else you want to say about downtown, get on the line now at 549-2937. Also coming up, we'll tell you about WJCT's special free screening this weekend of the war film Last Days in Vietnam, part of the PBS American Experience series. Then later, don't miss our special Rat Pack Wednesday music giveaway from our own David Luckin, a way to get into our new radio station, Relax Radio. All of that ahead. But first this morning, it's your chance to take part in the new vision for how to rebuild the Jacksonville Landing. The Downtown Investment Authority is holding another public workshop, or charrette as they're called, tonight. And they want the public's ideas on new design concepts for the iconic downtown site. Andre Wallace, CEO of the DIA, is here now in studio with a look at where the landing is going and taking your calls. Andre, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Great to see you. And here's our question to callers. What are your questions for Andre Wallace, who heads up the Downtown Investment Authority? What are your thoughts about what should be done with the Jacksonville Landing? They want the public's input, so call us up right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, or just weigh in on Facebook. So this is the second such workshop, Andre. You had one recently at the Landing and got a lot of feedback, and you hope to build on that tonight, correct?
That is correct. We had a workshop in June, mid to late June, and this is the second series of workshops. But this is geared more towards taking the strengths and weaknesses that we learn from the actual community itself. And, you know, we don't want to profess that we know everything, so we want to hear from the community and take those strengths and weaknesses and then begin to talk about what's the vision for the Jacksonville Landing, what are the potential development strategies and what are the potential development programs there. So we're going to have a pretty much like a science fair public charrette form process tonight, where we really want to focus on the theme areas will be public open space, the building massing and the development, traffic, parking, mobility, the energy equally as well. And so we want to document all that this evening.
What were some of the most interesting ideas that came out of the first charrette?
I would have to say, you know, basically everyone's vision for the landing is connect Laura Street to the riverfront. They definitely want to diversify the uses with residents, culture, and entertainment, create a gateway to and from downtown. They definitely talked a lot about restaurants along the actual riverfront, cafe shops, definitely the outdoor stage, public plaza, vent lawn. You know, the people really hammered in on the public space itself. And just basically making it a comfortable scale for building right within downtown.
We'll go to your calls for Andre Wallace, who heads up the Downtown Investment Authority, in just a moment about the future of the Jacksonville Landing, 549-2937. And this is the latest iteration in a long process, it must be said, about what to do with this property. Can you talk a little bit about the history of that? This is something that has bedeviled the developers, the city, for many years. Why do you think it's so important to get this right?
First and foremost is one of the key assets within downtown, and you have to get it right, and it takes time. There will be varying different opinions about what should be and what should not be. You try to come to as much of a consensus as you possibly can. There were iterations done by the developer. Some iterations were supported by the community, some were not. But one of the things in the last iteration that came out last August, I think that from a communication aspect, we wanted from the Downtown Investment Authority to make sure that we were very transparent with this process. So that's one of the reasons why we hired the urban design professional team of Wakefield, Beasley & Associates and Urban Design Group collectively together to work with us to talk about, first, public open space, and second, in concert with that, the private development around it. So we have a very vested interest in it from the Downtown Investment Authority, from the public sector standpoint, so we're taking the lead on this.
As you look at it, with someone who has experience at high levels in other cities looking at how to develop sites like this, what do you see as the biggest hindrance or hindrances to making this site more profitable, more popular?
One of the challenges is it's only a 6.6-acre site. first and foremost. So, you know, we keep talking about it as though it's a 20-acre plus site. Mm-hmm. So it's a very compact site. So getting how much public space is going to be within a 6.6-acre site, how much development would be there to allow the developer to generate some type of rate of return on their investment already there. That's where you really get into some very good debates. And so that's one of the real challenges here. But it sits in the heart of downtown, and we can't make a mistake.
And if you can do something with the landing, how do you see that as a linchpin for everything else the DIA wants to do?
First and foremost, it's the urban core. A lot of the other projects that we're talking about is not directly or not directly within the urban core, but we want to make sure that the urban core project gets done and gets done right. So this begins the linchpin of everything that we're already starting with in investments on Laurel Street. We've invested in Hammond Plaza. So we want to be able to make sure that coming down from City Hall all the way down to the actual river, that we do what we're supposed to be doing in terms of driving investments along that particular corridor. So this is also a linchpin for us.
And if you look down Laurel Street from City Hall down towards the landing, one idea that's come up time and time again is opening the landing up so that people can actually see the river. Do you think that will make it through this process, a cutout somehow, so that if you're looking south on Laura, there will be an open space so that the river is visible and accessible?
One of the main objectives in hiring Wakefield Business Associates and Urban Design Group, I did not mince words, that has to take place. If that does not take place, we will have a failure on our hands. So we're serious about that piece.
That's very key to you.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Well, let's go to the phones right now. If you're just tuning in, lots of calls, emails, tweets, and we want your Facebook comments too for Andre Wallace, CEO of the city's Downtown Investment Authority. Tonight, another public workshop at the landing as the public gives their input on what should be done with the redesign of the Jacksonville landing. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Carl in Jacksonville. Hi, Carl. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great, thanks.
I have more of just a statement, really. I recall when the landing was built. It was shortly after I moved to Jacksonville, and we thought it was the most wonderful thing in the downtown area. And initially, they started out with good stores like Banana Republic, and there was another clothing store, Jared's, et cetera. But over the years, it's just kind of we all know it's gone downhill. I would like to see them just level the whole property and build something that is maybe more up-to-date architecturally. And it just seems like the landing is, I guess it was the same folks who also installed the Inner Harbor in Maryland. And then in Virginia, there's another location. I just like to see something different. And also, just make it, I agree with the restaurant thing, that would be great. And really work on the parking.
Lots of comments from Carl. Thank you, Carl. Andre.
Yes, that has been discussed with regards to a complete demolition of the actual building that is there. And coming back with a complete new structure. That is what this whole design charrette process is geared
towards. Do you think that's going to actually happen?
I think that will be something that will be discussed this evening. It's been discussed at the first meetings. There's a great amount of support to do just that. But then surprisingly, at the last meeting in June, there were a number of people that talked about they like the current structure of the actual building. So that was kind of surprising to some of us. Hmm. However, we do agree that it's outdated. Rouse did the Inner Harbor. They did Bayside in Miami. This is the same similar development here. It does not interface with downtown, turns its back on it. You don't have interaction with the waterfront. So we know that has to change. So there's going to be a lot of debate and discussion this evening.
And he also mentioned parking.
Yes. Parking would be a component, but we're not going to drive a development centered solely around parking itself. There's a number of different parking options in and around, so we want to try to maximize the space itself from a public space, open space. There's a brand new parking garage that's just been completed there.
Right across the street.
Right across the street itself. So we want to make sure that we take advantage of all the parking resources there and allow for the best development on the actual 6.6 acres site.
Mark on the west side. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
You know, I was against this thing back in whenever it was built against Mayor Jed Godbold. I hate when the city becomes an investor and a builder in anything. I mean, we need a horse and we get an elephant. I'm all in favor of demolishing it and making it something useful like a parking lot. I mean, at least you get more people there every day. But one thing I noticed, like during the weekends, up until very recently when we were there, they had in the center courtyard, they had this little fountain that would, was trying to come up and the kids were allowed to play in it. And then all of a sudden they weren't. So one of the only reasons that, that we like to go down there, kind of arbitrarily just stopped. So that it was hot as it'd be hot as blazes in there. And the kids couldn't, have anything to play in. Another suggestion I have, since we do have it, when I was in Norfolk, they had a similar, I think it was called Waterfront, same developer, Rouse, I think, and it wasn't doing well as a mixed-use kind of, shops and restaurants, and they turned it all into all restaurants, and it seemed to work, at least for the few years that I was up there, it seemed to work pretty well. Do you have any information on that? Is it even still there? Did that work?
Thank you, Mark.
You said Norfolk, if I'm not mistaken. Norfolk's gone through different reiterations with regards to projects within their downtown itself. A lot of times what happens is cities invest in other particular projects, and these particular projects that are already underway fall by the wayside. With regards to your comment for the Landing itself, from the square footage of retail space at the Landing, we know is not working. So therefore, it has to be a reduction in that amount of square footage. We've got over 100 plus thousand square feet of space there. And right-sizing that for this particular market is critical for this particular project to succeed. I think that if you have the right type of retail commercial activity there, that people within Northeast Florida would want to go there.
And what defines that?
It's basically market driven, but one of the things I could certainly say to you is this. I don't think the Jacksonville Landing will be the downtown town center. So it has to be something that's indigenous to the urban core that you can't get anywhere else in Jacksonville, so you have to come here.
When you travel the country and you see sites like that work, what are some examples of the kind of unique retail that draws people in?
One of the things that work very well in terms of downtown, particularly today, the right type of restaurants, the right, bars, basically microbreweries. When you blend the microbrewery scene and you blend it with the actual restaurants, and then they're able to connect to the other nodes that you have there, like you have a performing arts center, like right next door, it makes very logical sense that you have the right upscale restaurants that allow someone that's going to a show over at the performing arts center to arrive at 6 p.m. instead of for a show that's going to go on at 8 p.m. instead of arriving at 7:45 p.m. So therefore, we want them to go to dinner next door, partake in the activities there. And also, as the gentleman talked about, activities for the children. I think that is huge, connecting people throughout all of Northeast Florida to come down and really enjoy our riverfront. That's one of the things that I would say that we've probably missed over the years, is engaging our community with the St. John's River itself. And we need to do a better job. And that's what this whole process is designed to do.
549-2937. Patricia in St. Mary's, Georgia is holding. Hey, Patricia, go ahead.
Hey, I'm listening to what he's saying, and I'm thinking One Spark. If you could keep the energy of One Spark with micro businesses that would have a smaller footprint, that would right size that square footage with exciting, innovative businesses and products that would be available to folks who are coming for a show and an interesting dinner. It could dovetail very nicely if you worked with the One Spark people just to create that excitement. You've got two years of excitement with One Spark. Keep people coming to Jacksonville because it's unique and get them to come to the Landing just for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia.
Patricia, thank you for your comment. We definitely want to build off of that particular energy as well, and your comments are well received.
Michael in Jacks Beach calls from across the listening area. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi. I just was wondering if anybody has gone up to New York to look at the High Line Walkway.
they converted the train, an old dilapidated train, elevated train, into a walking path and jogging path, and it's really revitalized that whole area. It used to be Skid Row. And I was wondering if they could convert the rail station downtown to a similar thing, because that really is underutilized. And if you convert it into a bike jogging trail, and we have the Gate River Run and all this down there, it would really revitalize it. And I think maybe some of our council member might go up to New York to look at it.
Thanks, Michael. The High Line in New York gets mentioned constantly. It's this shining example of urban renewal. I'm sure you're aware of it. What about that?
Yes, that is a great urban renewal project for New York. And it took a great planning effort, great commitment from public and private to bring that particular project together. And that's what we're embarking upon here equally as well. I understand the gentleman talked about the rail station here. Pretty much, I think he's referencing pretty much a prime Osborne location for the convention center. That's something that we're also studying and working on as well. But everything that we're talking about right now is the placement and how we're trying to change the landscape of Jacksonville over the next decade or so. So all these things are playing in and coming together fluidly at the same time.
And how do you see the DIA working with the new mayoral administration on these efforts? The whole purpose of the DIA when it was envisioned was that it would have independent authority regardless of who was running City Hall. How is that proceeding under Mayor Curry's administration?
Very well. As a matter of fact, I have a meeting today with Mr. Musa, and I attend the weekly department director meeting. So the Downtown Investment Authority, while it's has its independence, we are seamlessly interlocked in with the current administration, and that process is working very well. And we have to have that relationship because the Downtown Investment Authority does not have all the capital to do these particular projects, and we have to be partners with the city.
Lots of tweets and emails for Andre Wallace of the Downtown Investment Authority. Here's one from the former mayoral chief of staff, Chris Hand. When is my friend Andre Wallace going to join Twitter? We'll try to answer that question. Here are some ideas for the landing. John tweets the show, turn it into a park. Here are a few more. How about a bookstore and a library at the landing? Here's a tweet from Kingsley. Right now, there's just generic shops, Hooters, and tourist traps. Nothing interesting for Jacksonville. Crystalis, Hooters doesn't belong. Restaurants are important. Bring in Food Network chef restaurants, relevant and trendy. Here's an email from Lowell. Connect the Skyway to the stadium area to improve access to the landing area. How do you see that piece of the puzzle? Transit.
Transit is very important for any downtown, and we're working very closely. I work very closely with Nat Ford. I'm CEO for JTA. Just matter of fact, had a strategic planning session on transportation last week that he and I were part of that talks about the mobility of moving people in and around downtown from Brooklyn all the way to the actual stadium area itself, and that's important for the growth of our city. So that's very high on our list. With regards to Mr. Hand's comment about me getting on Twitter, my intern from UNF, she does have us on Twitter. And Chris, I will get a Twitter account.
You're going to get hooked up. So we'll follow you as soon as you join. Okay. Janet in Springfield. Hi, Janet. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. So notice that a lot of the businesses at the landing aren't getting the proper maintenance. The sewage is always not working, and the air conditioning doesn't work in a lot of the restaurants. And I just noticed that you can't really bring in nice restaurants into the landing if you don't have some of these basic upkeep things. And I worry that even with a new build out and they renovate everything, that it's just not going to be any better if it's still under the same ownership that doesn't take care of anything.
Thank you, Janet.
The current management, Slayman Enterprises, has a long-term lease.
Right.
It's going to take us out to pretty much 2050. We're working with the development team, and that is Slayman Enterprises. They recognize that they have a dated building, and when you redevelop, you come back with new product. And I think that some of the things that she's talking about, we know that we need first some new public infrastructure there. To address a lot of the concerns that she has. But a new facility deals with a lot of AC, issues and things of that particular nature. So we know that needs to take place.
And if you do, let's talk about the financing piece. Public-private partnerships are the byword here. How will the funding be sought and established for this whole redesign?
First, we got to come up with the right design that engages everyone. Second, then I need to sit with Mayor Curry and his team to talk about what is the investment opportunities for this particular project. There are certain things that the public sector would do on any particular development project. And then we look at, you know, is there the need for any additional public sector investment into a project? Right now, it's too premature for us to even have a discussion about what the financing would look like. But there are certain things from a public infrastructure that would need to be done in terms of roads and things of that nature to make a project work well.
Jam lines for Andre Wallace of the DIA. Let's go to Ted in La Villa. Hi, Ted. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that the most successful open space in Jacksonville, one of the most successful, is Memorial Park in Riverside. It is about the same size as the land. I think we need a successful space like that that has a promenade along the river. It has a statue in between the river, and it has Olmsted, the famous landscape planner in the United States. It has a nice big oval space with grass in it, and then it has a walkway around that, and there are plenty of trees and shade. I think we need to start doing something remarkable there and be focusing on the fact that that is the place where, I say that, the landing is the place where Laura Street connects to the river, and we don't have a significant space on the river other than the river walks on both North and South Bank, but there is no large space that's 6 acres or whatever that has the right landscaping and the right feel where people can really celebrate the river. Mm-hmm. And if it's necessary, I think we need to call it Eli Sleeman Park in honor of Tony's father, who was an immigrant that came to this city and started a very successful business and started, I guess, Tony Sleeman in his endeavor to develop areas around Jacksonville.
Thanks, Ted. That's Ted in La Villa. This public space piece, obviously, the public cares a lot about.
Absolutely. And I spoke with Ted yesterday, so I know exactly which Ted from La Villa we're talking to. Good morning, Mr. Pappas. The public space, as I indicated, it's one of the things I led off with, is very important to everyone. And Ted and his colleagues probably attended a workshop yesterday with some of our design team to voice their concerns with regards to the public space. So that is going to be something that's going to be in this particular design.
Jason in Jacksonville. Hi, Jason. You're on the air. Go ahead, Jason.
Hi. How are you this morning, Andre?
Good morning, sir.
We just opened up a business in the Landing, 5,000 square feet. We have a maker space for entrepreneurs and a business accelerator. And what we've been speaking with our community of, technological entrepreneurs in Jacksonville is we have a fantastic opportunity to take the Landing and make it the hub of arts and innovation in this city. I think there is a place for restaurants and possibly a boutique grocery chain that would support the business owners and the residents of downtown and create less of an issue with the parking, because they would have those amenities close to home, close to business, that they wouldn't need to be driving, you know, the 3 or 4, 5, 6 blocks to the city or all the way out to Publix and things of that nature. But I think we have a fantastic opportunity for arts and technology to bleed out of the Landing into the rest of the city. And I would love to see us take advantage of that with entrepreneurship, you know, STEM education, the arts cooperative, and all these entrepreneurs that aren't talking about this but are physically doing this as we speak.
Jason, what's your business?
It's CoLab Jack, Makerspace and Business Accelerator.
All right. Well, I had to get that plug in, right? Thanks, Jason. That's good feedback from one of the new tenants.
Yes, that's great. My team had been working on this particular concept of innovation in downtown. And it's great to see Jason coming together with the arts community. Tony Allegretti, these are things that we definitely talk about. Tim, and we want to continue.
Tim in Jacksonville. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to see the parking lot done away with and turned into a family zone with a giant Ferris wheel and maybe a playground that could be utilized for the kids. And that would separate you know, the family's on from the bar side of it and everything. And it, you could blend it in real nicely. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. You mentioned that too, Andre. You want this to be a place that families from across the region are drawn to.
Absolutely. I firmly believe the following. For the Jacksonville Landing to be successful from now moving forward, this has to be something that Northeast Florida owns. You know, we talk about developing something where we have visitors come, et cetera, so on and so forth, that don't live here in Northeast Florida. This one needs to be about Northeast Florida. And once we are drawn to it, then others will come to it.
Let's take one more call. James on the north side. Hi, James. Good morning.
How are you doing, Melissa?
Doing great, thanks.
First thing, I have to say this. I do miss your original theme song openings. I really do. I've been away for a while, but I came back. I've really missed it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But, you know, we have original music from a Jacksonville composer. So, we like...
Jeff Jack, am I saying that right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, what?
What's his name? Is it Chef Chick?
Yeah. Pyotr Chefchik with the symphony.
Okay. This is my comment on the landing, and I think everybody's skirting around it. I've been to a lot of the major cities, and it just seemed like nobody is really looking at, and I don't want to use the term, because the 1,000-pound elephant in the room. And I've never seen a downtown like this before. Every place you go, including the main part of downtown, there's a giant church. I mean, to me, the best way to figure out what you want to do with the location, you got to put those churches on the map, because they have prime locations that in normal cities, you would have a lot going on. To me, everybody's been trying to figure out what to do with the landing for years, but you have churches. When I get off of work, I want to get with my friends. We want to, let's go downtown, let's have a ball, let's kind of unwind a little bit after a week, but there's nothing like that down there. There's nothing. And I hear some of the comments people say, well, let's open up a wellness program, let's do this, do that. I mean, that doesn't sound very attracting to a person that, you know, that the entrepreneur just wants to get off and have fun downtown. Thank you.
Okay, James. Thank you.
I didn't quite. He was looking for, I assume, a venue or something of that nature in downtown. Is that what he was saying?
Right. But you want that venue. You want that focal point to be the landing.
I would certainly love for it to be.
And here's a comment on our Facebook page from Paula. What about those nubbly bricks on Laura Street in front of the landing? They're supposedly there to discourage motorists from driving too fast, but really they discourage anyone wearing pretty shoes from walking to the landing at all. Those have already been laid down, but as you get ready to welcome the public tonight, you want comments like this.
Absolutely. There is not one particular comment that we would not listen to. So everyone's ideas need to be given this evening. So we take that all into consideration, because there would probably with the development, there would be the need for some new type of infrastructure, road infrastructure. So if the ladies don't like the brick pavers, then, you know, tell us.
Yeah, that you just got that feedback. Here's a tweet from Carla. I would like to see the new restaurant Italy in the landing space. Everyone who's been tuning in and weighing in, you can also come out tonight to this workshop at the landing in the blue room on the second floor. The meeting is scheduled from 6 to 8. It's the second public workshop on how to rebuild the Jacksonville Landing. Have your say and connect with Andre Wallace, CEO of the Downtown Investment Authority. Andre, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Much more still ahead later. Keep listening for David Luckin's special Wednesday music giveaway. It's a Rat Pack treat. But up next, we'll tell you about the special free screening this weekend here at WJCT of the classic Last Days in Vietnam. Back in a moment.
Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
New name, new look, great information. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Good for You is a day of celebrating women's health planned just for you. Great speakers, great food, health screenings, and so much more. Hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to WJCT/goodforyou.
You remember how it was? You got 3 months off school every summer, and then when you went back, all that stuff you thought you knew wasn't so easy to remember. If only there was a way.
Instead of going back to school 3 months behind, they're now going back to school a month ahead.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, closing that summer achievement gap. It's next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Wherever you spend your morning, NPR's Morning Edition is there with you. Wherever the story takes place, NPR's Morning Edition connects it with you.
Dallas.
Des Moines.
Topeka.
Montana.
Cleveland.
San Francisco.
Denver.
Philadelphia.
Minneapolis.
Miami.
Colorado.
Washington.
You will own your morning wherever you are when you choose to spend tomorrow with Morning Edition from NPR News. Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. It's the powerful film chronicling the chaotic final days of the Vietnam War and the story of the bravery of those who escaped.
The American troops were gone, and as a result, the house of cards began to collapse.
We were dealing with an ambassador who was just convinced that somehow there wouldn't have to be an evacuation, and therefore there wouldn't have to be a concern about evacuating South Vietnamese.
These people were dead men walking. Sometimes there's an issue not of legal and illegal, but right or wrong. I borrowed a truck, and I drove them to the airbase. I had told them, when you hear three thumps, that means hold the baby's mouths, don't breathe, don't talk, don't make any noise. I was going to get them out.
This weekend here at WJCT, AARP's Summer Movie Classics will present a free screening of Last Days in Vietnam, part of the PBS American Experience series. Here with a preview now, we welcome Nancy Stanton, Associate State Director of Advocacy with AARP Florida. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Also with us, Dr. David Cartwright, Presidential Professor in the History Department at UNF. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Nancy, let's start with you. Why is AARP showing this film this weekend?
Well, most people know AARP by our discounts, as well as perhaps some of our advocacy efforts that take place in Washington and Tallahassee. But we think that life should be savored. So we do some things that have some entertainment value. But we also, we call this fun with purpose. And we do things in the community to let people know that we are here and local and that we want to be relevant in their lives. So taking a look at this particular film was something we thought might particularly resonate among boomers. And so we're excited to be offering this movie this weekend.
David Cartwright, this is part of PBS's American Experience, a film by, I believe, Rory Kennedy, daughter of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., correct? This looks at those chaotic final days as people were trying to get out of Vietnam. Tell us a little bit about what people will see.
Well, the film is set primarily in 1975, and it's incredibly dramatic because the evacuation was delayed for such a long period of time until the last possible minute. And as a result, far fewer people escaped totalitarian communist rule than might otherwise have been the case. The film asks a very important question, why?
Yeah, why did it go down the way it did?
Yes, exactly.
And as a historian, can you explain some of the reasons why?
Part of it is that the government of South Vietnam, thought mistakenly that the United States, having invested so much blood and treasure in Vietnam, would not let the government fall. and that, in fact, B-52s would be coming in, American military assistance would be coming in, that the United States government would stave off the collapse of South Vietnam. It didn't. In fact, it couldn't, given the political situation by 1975. Unfortunately, the U.S. ambassador, Graham Martin, encouraged the government in its belief that help would be on the way, and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, not only will people learn about this at the screening, they will be invited to share their stories as well, right, at the AARP listening post. What's that all about?
We at AARP are very interested in what people have to say. And rather than us talking to people so much, we have actually put up listening posts in a lot of our different events. And the idea is that we want people to share what's meaningful for them in terms, in this case, with their experience in Vietnam or as a person in the military, or maybe even a college student or whatever, wherever they may have been during the 60s.
Anyone that was around at that time, you want them to share their stories.
Exactly.
It's funny, this is timely in another sense in that the presidential race, the Vietnam years have come up in recent days with candidate Donald Trump saying John McCain was not a war hero because he was captured and imprisoned during the Vietnam War. Do you expect that to be part of the discussion at all?
Well, I have no idea what questions people will be asking at the end. It's certainly not something I intend to include in my introduction, but yes, I imagine there's a good chance that that might come up.
To me, that's just proof that a quarter of a century on, those years are still very personal and painful for many Americans.
I totally agree. I think there's a lot of unresolved kind of feelings around this. And we were discussing earlier that we are anticipating that there might be some different kinds of viewpoints that are expressed. And we are not going to back away from it. We totally want to honor whatever it is that people have to say or what they're thinking. And we just hope that people look upon it as they've been given an opportunity to say what's, you know, on their mind.
And you want not just veterans, but this is a free screening open to everyone. This is an educational opportunity for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only will there be the listening post, there will be quite a few interesting people that were going to be sharing their thoughts at this event. Isn't that right?
Yes. The organizers have invited a number of Vietnam veterans to field questions at the end of the presentation of the film.
Right. And this is free, by the way. Let's say that one more time. This is a free screening this Saturday at 2 p.m. right here at WJCT. And you still have some slots available.
That's correct. It's absolutely free. But we do ask that people register. And I have that information for where they can register. And you can do that by phone by calling 877-926-8300. And it's important that you register so that we can be certain we have enough seats set out.
That's right. So again, if you're just tuning in, Last Days in Vietnam screens this Saturday at 2 o'clock at WJCT Studios. It's AARP's Summer Movie Classics, a free screening of this important film. And thank you both so much for giving us a preview. We really appreciate your time.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you.
We were joined by Nancy Stanton, Associate State Director of Advocacy with AARP Florida, and David Courtwright, Professor at UNF. Again, that screening 2 o'clock this Saturday here in our building. Back in a moment with a special Wednesday music giveaway from our own David Luckin.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to announce that Mary Enworth will be this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach. Mary is co-author of Pathways to the Common Core. She is deputy director of middle schools at the Teachers Reading and Writing Project, Columbia University. Mary is just one of the many great speakers you will hear throughout the day. For more information or to purchase tickets, go to WJCT/teach.
Hey, it's John Moe, the host of Wits, a new show recorded live at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. Some of the top names in comedy and music join us each week for sketches.
You are so far outside the box right now, you are back in the box.
Music.
I'm out of the game.
And life's big questions. How's it going?
It's going great, man. This is a wonderful program.
Saturday night at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
This Friday on Closing the Loop, Susan King was an accountant with an international consulting firm. She had volunteered with nonprofits, and when her kids left for college, she decided to jump in full time. It's changed how she looks at life. Closing the Loop, Fridays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour from Van Morrison to the Rat Pack and more. We're talking music, Relax Radio, and a special Wednesday giveaway as our own music director, David Luckin, stops by with some goodies. Good morning to you.
Nice to be with you again. We haven't been here for about a month or two talking about new music, and today we're going to talk about Van Morrison's new album called Duets, Reworking the Catalog. He's hooked up with Don Was to produce it, and he's got people like Steve Winwood, Taj Mahal, Mavis Staples, Michael Bublé, Natalie Cole, and George Benson all helping him do his less famous songs. Here's a little taste of George Benson's duet with Van.
Well, I'm higher than the world.
Tell me about it.
And I'm living in my dreams. Make it better than it seems today. The clouds, and I'm wrapped up in the sound. Make it better all around today.
You know, Melissa.
Oh, that's great.
And when you think about it, you think the first time I heard Van Morrison was 1965 with Gloria, and then he did Brown Eyed Girl in 67. They did Moondance in 70.
50 years of artistry.
And how many people do you want to hear that you first heard in 65?
I know.
And he still sounds great. He's in his 70s.
It's amazing. I mean, and look at this list of people on this album that he's duetting with. Gosh, it's
go ahead. Read a few.
Bobby Womack, Steve Winwood, Mark Knopfler, Taj Mahal, Mavis Staples, Michael Bublé, Natalie Cole, George Benson, who we're hearing right now, Gregory Porter, Claire Neal, P.J. Proby, Joss Stone. Even his daughter, Shayna.
Shayna, who's got a beautiful voice.
And this is called Duets, Reworking the Catalog. It's at the top of your list. I can see why.
It's a really nice album.
Oh,
and anything Van Morrison does, he's one of those people who like Ray Charles and very few others, can do country, rock, blues, jazz. He can do it, all of it, and he does it all so effortlessly.
So pick that up right now. But you've got
a
new artist for the week, too.
Our second pick is JoJo Effect, who've been around for 9 years. I love this group. And of course, most of our listeners know Anna Chanel, their lead singer, from all the announcing for our After Hours programming. She's got a funky song here called Give Me the Soul Beat. And this really harkens back to the 70s. Here's a little bit of JoJo Effect from an album called Smarter.
You know what I love about this? It shows how our music is exported all over the world. They're not from Memphis or New Orleans.
No.
They're from Germany.
And they seldom sing German. It's almost always English. This vocal is by Brenda Boykin, their other lead singer, and she's got her own CDs out. And it's just fun music. It's on the Chin Chin Records label, and of course Amazon and most of your favorite retailers have this album. It's called Smarter by JoJo Effect, and it's loungy, and it's jazzy, and it's soulful.
That's great stuff. So two great picks from David, and now the excitement builds because we have a giveaway right now. This is so exciting when you do this because every time we do it, we get so many emails, and I get so excited to see them pouring in. It's Live and Swingin', the Ultimate Rat Pack Collection, an incredible boxed set of Frank, Dino, and Sammy Work in the Room. And there's even a video disc on this thing,
it's
too.
It's a double CD, or CD double with a DVD. And this is to remind people of our relaxed radio station, HD3, where we play a lot of Sinatra. We probably play more Sinatra than anyone on the planet. I think we've got about 60 songs in rotation. But we're up to over 2,000 songs now, Melissa, on Relax. So if you haven't checked out Relax Radio, call us up, log onto our website, get yourself an HD radio, and start chilling out 24 hours a day to the music of your life.
And email us right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org if you want Live and Swingin', the Ultimate Rat Pack Collection. We will pick a listener at random.
There's Frank. Maybe we'll fly you to Rio.
And you know, if you love this kind of music, and I love it, my kids love it. My kids, who are preteens, loved Jones College Radio, which of course was on the air for decades in Jacksonville. When it went off the air, you, David Luckin, and Sean Birch, the producer of this program, saw an opportunity to create something to fill that void, and you came up with this incredible new radio station, Relax Radio. Anyone with an HD radio can tune it in any time of day, and the feedback has just been incredible.
All positive. We sold over 700 HD radios. We've yet to have any returned, no complaints. So we think we locked onto the right mix of oldies, light jazz, and the Great American Songbook. And it's a full service station, Melissa. There's news and weather at the top of every hour, 6 minutes of NPR news. So you can stay well informed of what's going on, and then you can go with the music and just forget about all that bad news.
And again, let's mention, to listen to Relax, you need an HD radio. It's 89.9 HD3. Now, some of you in your cars, if you have HD in your radio car, your car radio, rather, you can listen to it that way. But if not, you need an HD radio to get Relax. 89.9 HD3 to listen to this music and relax with it.
And the beauty of the HD radio stations we have is the classical station, HD2 Classical, 24 hours a day, all the best music ever written. And our music programs at 89.9 come out in CD quality when you listen with an HD radio. So if you like the Electro Lounge or Country Crossroads or Blues Horizon or Indie Endeavor, all those great songs, when you get an HD radio, suddenly it's a CD. It's not that airy radio wave sound. It's crystal clear.
It is. I have it on in my office. I love Relax, and I'm so proud of you and Sean and Alan Holm, Alan Rhodes, our engineer. The three of you put this together from the ground up. It is such an achievement, and you deserve nothing but kudos.
We appreciate it. We're still adding songs. I've got another 200 to upload, so we're going to end up with about a 3,000-song playlist of all the great songs.
Meanwhile, the emails are just pouring in. People want to get their hands on the Ultimate Rat Pack Collection, so one lucky winner is going to get this in the mail, a little ring-a-ding-ding for one of our lucky listeners.
I'll see if we can't get us an HD radio to give away next month.
All right. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
We'll close with a little more Van Morrison. Thanks for tuning in, and that's our program. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Our podcasts are now up every day on iTunes and Stitcher. Make sure to subscribe to them. Next on Diane Rehm, thousands of scientists meet in Washington this week to share the latest research on diagnosing, treating, and preventing Alzheimer's disease. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.